Welcome. You are listening to the Learning to Believe Again podcast with your host, Brittany Bexton.
Where do you begin when you're learning to believe again?
Hi, everyone. Welcome to the Learning to Believe Again podcast. I have Marion McSpadden on with me today. Thank you so much for joining me today. I would love for you to just tell the audience a little bit about yourself and who you are and what you do now in your life.
Hi, Brittany. Thank you. And hi to the audience. I live in the Kansas City area. I am a life coach by trade. I help people break through something that's not working, or maybe more target it if they're spiritually stuck somewhere and they just need a breath of fresh air. I can bring that.
Awesome. I'm so glad to have you on today. Thank you for joining us. I know that you are involved in ministry work now. You do life coaching, and obviously you have some ministry basis with that from what you just said. So you have a great relationship with God at this point. Did you grow up in church, or did that come later on?
I grew up in church. I was in church pretty much every Sunday. However, I did not have a relationship.
So what kind of church were you in as a kid?
As some people call them Amish, some people call them Mennonite, but it's a very cultural, it's beautiful, you know, you got horses, no cars, you're living in the rural area, if you like country, simple houses typically with one-room schoolhouses that you ride your bicycle to maybe a mile and a quarter. And I grew up on a 400-acre dairy farm, so very, very rural farm-oriented girl.
And where was that?
I grew up in a small town west of Jefferson City, Missouri.
Awesome. And that's where the dairy farm, the Amish dairy farm that you grew up on was?
Yes.
Very neat. So I know that everyone has heard of the Amish culture a little bit, but I know personally, I've heard little snippets. I don't know a lot about it myself, and I'm sure most of the audience doesn't either. So what is the Amish culture actually like? What are some of the rules? What is it like compared to regular society?
The similarities is we're all people.
Right.
I don't care what culture you live in, what clothes you wear, what vehicle you drive. We're all people. We all have hopes and dreams. We all hurt. We all have successes. We all want to grow up and get married, you know, for the most part.
Yeah.
Have kids, you know, all the basic foundation things are very much the same. There's disappointments in both worlds. And so I'm going to pick on the culture part and say, this is what was different for me. And then I developed a mindset out of that culture and the religious training around it that said, this is what you must be. You have no other options. This is your future. And if you do differently, you probably go to hell.
Wow. Okay. So culturally, what did you learn? I mean, what... there are a lot of rules, right, in the Amish culture as far as, so tell us a little bit about some of that.
So the specific rules within the Amish Mennonite culture is, I like to be clear, there's many different groups. So just because my experience was this may not mean that somebody else you know or talk to will have had a different experience, because the rules are just... don't cut your hair. You know, you wear dresses when you're a woman. You don't wear jewelry. You don't wear makeup. You know, just a lot of do's and don'ts. You could have this in your house possessions. Your home could look like this, or your outdoor environment with the equipment. I grew up with tractors. There are cultures that don't have tractors. We did not have cars. So our mode of transportation was a horse and buggy or a bicycle or walk, or you had to hire a driver to take you somewhere. So many cultures, there's many different levels. You know, some can have this kind of a car, but not that kind of a car. You know, in our buggies were the group that I was with, they were all, they kind of look the same. So everything is kind of cookie cutter styled. And typically anything that draws attention to yourself, like making yourself look or feel beautiful, was pretty much frowned upon.
Okay. And as far as household too, electricity, did you have electricity growing up?
Yes. The group I was with did have electricity. We didn't have any technology. So, you know, lights, switches, and, you know, just the basic, we had like a mixer in our kitchen, but some groups don't.
So know. Did you have a regular oven too, or was it more wood burning?
There are many people who like the wood burning heat, and they use it for heat as well as cooking. My mother did not do that. She had a, we actually had an electric kitchen range.
Okay. It's so interesting, the differences even just between Amish communities.
Yes, very much so.
So how old were you? I guess, so I, actually I have a very specific question. I can't remember the name of it. Is it the Amish community where you take a year or a period of time to explore the rest of the world and come back, or is that different?
That's different.
Okay.
I'm not familiar with that culture. We did not have that in the group that I was with. Okay. So I can't speak into that one.
Okay. So being in the Amish culture, you were raised in it, obviously. Is it one of those cultures where if you leave, you can't come back? Or do people kind of come and go as they get older, regularly or semi-frequently, I guess?
It's probably a pretty small group of people that actually leave the culture, and then the number that would come back, I would say, is almost non-existent.
Okay, interesting. So how old were you when you ended up leaving the culture? Did your family leave, or did you leave to explore on your own?
I was 34 years old when I say I crossed the Red Sea. I made that part, which put a huge separation between my family of origin. My mother and father were alive. I was single. I had not ever been married or did not have children. Mm-hmm. And I made the journey on my own.
So what led to that?
You want the short version or the longer version?
You can dive into whichever one you want to share with me.
I was a school teacher after I became an adult. And so the teaching part of me was in there. I did that for 7 years in a one-room schoolhouse, just like I went to school with eight grades. Eighth grade was my education. And we had in the schoolhouse, we did not have electricity. We only had outdoor toilets and no water, or it was a wood-burning stove when it was cold in the wintertime. And again, that's just culture. You know, I don't mind living in that type of environment. Matter of fact, we now have a little cabin that's off grid just for fun. So, you know, different people enjoy different things, but I didn't mind the culture. The culture was actually beautiful to me. The community and the friendships within these cultures are mostly wonderful. Because if there's a need, they all pull together. And that's all I knew. I knew community. I knew large family. I was number six of eight children. Wow. And for the most part, my life was pretty good. There were some emotional deficits that I had. But, you know, that's not so uncommon. Probably most of the listeners can remember of emotional deficits growing up as a child.
Absolutely.
You know, we're not all fed on a silver spoon where it's all just good and right for us. So I don't want to make my story that different from others, but this is where I was. I was a school teacher, did that for 7 years, starting at the age of 18 and ended that at 25. And then it was a career shift. I started helping women deliver their babies in their homes and took on the role of being a midwife and supporting them. So the coaching and the teaching and all of that kind of got wrapped up in a big old ball of helping these women birth their babies at home. And I have so many beautiful stories of brave women who, worked hard and had their babies and they loved it. They felt like that was what they were meant to do. And I just saw so much courage. So my hat's off to the brave women that birth children. So I think it was part of the responsibility of caring, you know, mothers' lives, babies' lives, and that responsibility falling on me.
Yeah.
Started perhaps a journey of whatever wasn't working now worked even less. And the pain that I had locked down, buried down from an early childhood days just intensified. I had great dreams of being sort of a superstar midwife and then developing a clinic within my area where other women from similar communities could come and spend time, get experience. We'd have, you know, hands-on training. We would do things to help prepare them. So I had a big vision in that area, and I loved being a coach. I loved being with the women. I got a lot of accolades of the women were appreciative of my service because I was a good coach to them.
Yeah.
But in here, it was not working. Mm-hmm. And in my heart, it was not working. So as the responsibility came on, and then some disappointments happened within, you know, we lost an aunt that was living in her home. And there was just things that took place that I couldn't handle anymore. And I felt like I was going to go down if I didn't have help. And that's where I started crying out to God. I knew about God, but I didn't know him in my heart. I didn't have a relationship, didn't have a connection with him. I was taught about the basic Bible that I still believe today, mm-hmm. even after experiencing him. So much of what I was taught was what I still believe, what I still encounter God, but I just didn't know God as a good God. I saw him as a faraway God. And it was that desperation that absolutely, if I don't get help, something's going to break. I knew something was going to break inside of me, or my physical body would die if I didn't get some relief, because it was just so heavy.
Yeah.
And I started crying out to God. I walked the country roads and cried. You know, I cried hard. And in my pillow at night, I cried in my pillow at night. And I didn't know God could help me, but I didn't know who else to ask. And he could help me. He started putting people in my life, people who gave me a little bit of strength here, a little bit of strength there. And then I was given information that made me reach out and want more. I was sort of like, a dry sponge, that any information that came to me, I seized it and I took it to the inside of me. And it still, life kept getting harder. And I hit that point where, you know, a couple more disappointments, a couple more things that were just more than I could bear, I thought. Mm-hmm. I had that breakthrough where I simply said, God, I'm going to trust you. What is happening in here, I cannot bear anymore, but I'm going to trust you. I'm going to put myself into the arms of Jesus. I'm going to stay so close to you, because there was also something in me that was saying, you may be going. And I didn't want to go to hell. I didn't want to be led astray. I didn't want to do wrong. Yeah. And so I thought, well, if I'm in Jesus' arms, I'm so close to him, I won't go to hell because I'm in his arms. And he's not going there. So if I stay that close, I'm not going there. Yeah. And I just really put my trust and confidence in the Lord. And that was what gave me a lot of breakthroughs.
That's awesome. So I have a question, and I guess it's cultural, and you did graze on this a little bit, but I'm guessing the same Christian Bible that we would all have in the Amish culture.
Yes.
Is it just the way it's taught that there's more kind of the fire and brimstone focus, where if you don't do things exactly right, it's more law-based?
I think it's a cultural thing that has been handed down from generation to generation, and a belief system that was put in place hundreds of years ago that they still manage to maintain. It's amazing how they can maintain the culture as they do. You know, I love the people. I have reached back and connected in so many ways, and I'm very supportive of anybody in that culture. And I've not been the voice that said, oh, you need to come out here because it's better here. I don't care whether somebody drives a horse and buggy or a car. What I care about is that their hearts know God and experience His love. And that was my breakthrough. When I knew the love of God, I also knew Jesus. It was like all wrapped up in one. And then the Holy Spirit came in there at the same time. And I didn't have language for it, but I knew it.
Yeah.
It was in me. And there's another significant thing that happened right in that season. And I was having a conversation. It was actually at a training that I believe God provided for me to help me get some tools to just know how to live life. Yeah. And they made us talk. They had many exercises where we couldn't just zip our lip and put on a facade and pretend we were okay. They just had us like group exercises talking and opening up. And in one of those conversations privately, I was talking to a colleague, and she and I just had a conversation. And I said, you know, I've never told an adult this. And when I told her my story, she says back to me, I was raped when I was 5 years old too. And I never put language to that. And I dropped like a sack of potatoes. I mean, I went unconscious. I went into a state of a coma, whatever it was. And I don't know, maybe in there for an hour or so. I didn't ask anybody, and I couldn't tell. But I was in a good place, in a safe place. And somebody was there to talk me out of that place of unconsciousness. And in that time of being unconscious, and this was, it's at the same time I was getting close to God that this revelation of the abuse as a young child surfaced. So now I had to deal with a whole lot more of, you know, who am I? You know, what really happened? But in that time of when that revelation came, there's two things that were sort of downloaded into my spirit, I believe, from God. And one of them was that I needed to confront the person who violated my life. And the other one was that I was going to be going. I didn't know where, but I knew I was going to be going, and it would be different. And so those were the two pursuits that when I came back from there, that event was to process, digest, press into God, ask Him to lead and guide me, trusting Him, writing Jesus a love letter every night, just totally in love with God and Jesus. It was like I got bathed in this incredible love. And then I started educating myself on, you know, sexual abuse, and started understanding, you know, these emotions and this heartbreak that I felt all my life was, you know, a result of perhaps many things, but it had certainly a big break that took place. And pursued winding down my midwifery business, where, because I was responsible for maybe 14 women at that time. Wow. So just a lot going on, but I wound, when I say wind down, I didn't take any more new clients. And also, I worked to get the courage to get strong enough to confront the person that violated my life when I was young, for two reasons, which I understood in that coma state. One was to protect other children, and the other one was to take my own authority back.
Yeah, absolutely. You had talked about really just wanting Jesus to wrap His arms around you, and knowing that if you were close to Him that way, that you wouldn't go to hell, that He would be close to you. So was that a gradual process as you kind of came to that? Or when you asked Him in, was it kind of an immediate sense of His warmth and feeling the Holy Spirit's presence? And maybe it's a little bit of both, but.
Well, leading up to that, I was getting some information and understanding that brought me to that point. When I pressed into that, of saying, I need You, and I'm going to put myself in Your arms. I was by myself on the Missouri riverbank outdoors by myself. I wanted to be away from people at that moment, and I made that decision. But the reason I went out by myself, I was like a wounded animal hurting so badly. I just had to have some space. And so what happened at that moment is the intense pain ceased, but I didn't really encounter that good presence till a couple days later. I was still in the same training place, and they had us form a large standing circle, and we had our arms around each other's shoulders, and they were playing the song, Abba Father. And that's the first time that this incredible love washed over me. And I started, you know, just crying, and I grabbed the person next to me. I have no idea who it was. I probably squeezed the breath out of them. But that was the first time I experienced that overwhelming sense of a presence that was greater and more stronger and more powerful than I was. Yeah. And that presence came to me periodically in the midst. And I must say that the battle got even more intense. The darkness got even darker for me in the midst of moving forward with that presence. But I knew it was good, and I wanted more of it. Yeah. And I had to fight my way out of that depression where, you know, maybe it was 2 minutes of not being depressed and then, you know, 2 weeks of feeling that pain. But I changed that time where maybe one day of no pain and 7 days of pain, and then finally 3 days of no pain and maybe 4 days of pain, till it took trigger spins sometimes, like it was 2 weeks out of that pain, and then something would trigger me and I flop right back into that oppressive pain. Yeah. But I kept pursuing the Lord. I kept being hungry. There was just not enough of that goodness of God. And it's been 20 years, and I still long for that connection and that nearness with God, because it's so good. And I know it's honorable to Him.
Yes. Yeah. And there's always more of it.
Yes.
Always more. That's the amazing thing. You know, even when we fall away at periods or struggle, He's always there to bring us back. And there's always more of His presence than we've experienced before.
Yes.
I love that about God. So while that was going on, were you still in the community and trying to get out? Or was that, had you already removed yourself from the Amish community at that point?
I did what I needed to do in the community. I did not take any more clients. I made the moves necessary. I actually bought a car nobody knew about, got a driver's license nobody knew about. And at the appointed time, I made a confrontation with the perpetrator, and then I left. And that was 6 months from the time of all this surfacing, yeah, to actual departure. But the departure, of course, took me and my pain with it. And I still cried. I cried buckets of tears before I left, but because I didn't want to leave what was important to me. I had some really close connections with my nieces. Mm-hmm. And some of them were quite young. Like I had a niece that was 5 and 6 years old that I was a lot like a mom to. And it just absolutely broke my heart. It broke my heart to know that I'm going to cause my mother pain. And I know she suffered a lot because of my choices.
Yeah.
But I did what I knew in my heart that I was being sent to do.
Yeah. Sometimes the choices we make are hard.
Yes.
Good choices still have pain attached to them.
This definitely was one of those. And, you know, in some ways, maybe someday I'll be fully healed from that. But I think there's still an ache in my heart that longs for total restoration in those, yeah, relationships that got challenged because they didn't know how to relate to this new person that now cuts her hair, wears, right, jewelry, makeup, pants, all the things that, you know, they believe I was taught not to do.
Yeah. Yeah. I would love to talk a little bit more about that too. But first, I just want to ask, you mentioned a few times that people had given you information along the way that kind of led you to God and to relationship with Him, and information that you were able to internalize and then move forward with it on your own? Was that people you ran into randomly in the community? You talked about that workshop. Was that something that someone told you about and brought you to?
Yes. There was a different conservative church group. It wasn't the same church group I was, a lady that I delivered a baby for, and she had just encountered what, you know, the religious phrase of being born again. She had just had encountered the nearness of God being real to her. And she fed me some of the information that had helped her. And I'll never forget one of those teachings that she shared with me was from, I think he was from Africa, perhaps, a minister of the Word of God. And he said, when Jesus went towards the cross and they whipped him before they crucified him, and there was a longer message. This is just the part that's so clear to me yet, that when they were whipping him, the Father who loved him would have just longed to stop them and say, stop. But he looked all the way down the road all these years and he saw you, and it had to go on. And that was the first time that I realized that Jesus actually did that for me, because he loved the world. Yeah. Not just me, he's for everyone. But at that moment, it became personal for me that Jesus took those stripes for me. And I remember just bawling my eyes out. I bawled all the time anyway, but now I finally bawled about something better.
Right. There are good tears and hard tears, but
yes.
That's amazing. Yeah. You know, he did die for everyone, but there's a verse that talks about how he would trade the whole world just for you. Right. And that means that God would have done it if it was just one person that needed to be saved. And I think that that's amazing, because he is the God that leaves the 99 for that one person.
Yes.
That's how much he cares.
Yes.
And that's what intimacy is like with him. It's that beautiful, you know, he cares that much.
Yes.
So speaking a little bit about your family, it sounds like there's been some restoration since you left.
Yes. And I'm grateful for everyone that has accepted or partially embraced the change that I've made. It's not fully restored, but I'm just grateful for every effort that gets made.
Absolutely. So since you've come out, what have been some of the most amazing parts of your life living with God and living this new cultural existence, so to speak?
Well, that's a really big question.
I know it is. I guess... what are some moments that have been really meaningful to you? You don't have to tell them all, of course, but just some moments that have been really meaningful to you that, you know, I would never have had this had I not found God the way I did and shifted my life.
Right. Well, 7 years into the journey, I unfortunately allowed disappointment and grief to cover my heart and harden my heart. And I actually started feeling like I did prior to the break. And I knew that wasn't right, but I heard this little voice in my head that said, see, you left everything. And it's like I took this plunge into the sea and I came up empty-handed. Where's my hand on the camera? Came up empty-handed. There was nothing in it. I didn't have anything to give anyone. And I was empty on the inside myself. Yeah. And, you know, I think all people can relate to that. We all hit those roadblocks sometimes where we can feel empty on our side, on the inside. But this is where I thank God that I say he rescued me twice.
Yeah.
He connected me with a people group. And the first time I met those pastors, this pastor's wife, I guess I said something about I needed help. But she had the discernment to say what I needed to hear, to bring me back so I could get some help. So that was a real miraculous thing that I experienced and knew God in such an intimate way. And then after 7 years, got covered up with dirt. I mean, it's like my well got dirt thrown into it and it got all mucky. I still wanted God. And if you'd asked me, do you love God? I would have said, yes, you know, this is the best thing that's ever happened to me. But in essence, what was coming out of me and in me was pretty mucky.
Yeah.
So that was a really big moment. And then probably the next one that I would like to talk about is after about 4 years after that encounter, actually 5 years, I was invited to go to Israel, and I took a trip to Israel, and absolutely it changed my life again. I learned as I went along that one of the things that I believe God has called me to is to be a voice for Israel and to help other people connect in the way that God is opening doors for.
Yeah.
And I'll share that in a little bit too, of some new doors that have opened for me. So that was a very defining moment. Of course, growing in every way, you know, responding. I ended up doing 3 years of school of ministry. I said yes to God in every way I knew how and maintained my life. I didn't do it all right, Brittany. I messed up a lot. There are a lot of things, if I could take my eraser, I'd like to go back and do over. But I never stopped responding. When the opportunity came again, I would always respond to God and the opportunities that he gave me to connect with him, even though sometimes it was painful to trust again once you had your trust broken. But those 3 years of school of ministry that taught me the biblical foundation of who the Jewish people were and the timeline of the Bible, which had always sort of been fuzzy for me, became very clear. I knew who God was. That wasn't so fuzzy. Of course, I keep knowing him more, but it was a timeline, and just a lot of things that were fuzzy became so clear for me, and just loved every second of, you know, learning about God and his word and what he said, so that when I went to Israel, it felt like a destiny. And then a year later, I went to Europe, and that was just a fun trip. Got to see amazing things. And my favorite part of it is there's a little town called Gimmelwald in Switzerland, way up high in the Alps. And I got to do a 6-hour hike on my own because my husband couldn't go with me on the hike. Yes, it was a childhood dream to be in the Alps, and I was not going to be denied. The mountains were gorgeous. It was hardly any houses except small little Alp huts that you might read about, and the cows out in the pastures way up high with beautiful flowers, green, lush green. It was everything my heart desired to be in the midst of for beauty.
That's amazing. I love Switzerland. I had the joy of going there, well, many years ago now. I'm not even sure how many, but it's one of the most beautiful places. It really is. And the cows wear bells, so the hills sing on top of all of that. That's amazing. So you mentioned your husband. I guess that means you met and married your husband after you left.
I did.
And you had said that you had some other new exciting things going on that you wanted to share about as well. So
I married into a business. So I supported my husband in his business where we work with contractors and farmers. And, you know, there were good parts about that, but there was sort of in here something that felt unfulfilled. I didn't end up having my own children. And so I can connect with anybody listening who does not have their own children, the grief that you can experience through that. I had to overcome. That was a really hard one, a really, really hard one. One that I laid down my desire, my will, and laid down again and laid down again because it was relentless. I'm getting past that for the most part, but that took me years here on the other side of that journey. with the separation from my family, there was grief. And then the grief of not having children after I got married was a really big grief for me to overcome. And so I can identify with anyone and be willing to have a conversation with anyone on that as well. Where was I going to go with that? Oh, so I was working with my husband. Mm-hmm. It was like, it was good. I had a lot of blessings, but there was an empty space on the inside. Yeah. Part of it may have been family, longing for family. And the other part, I think, was this coaching, teaching part in me was not getting fulfilled. So I got connected in the coaching world, and it really just started filling that emptiness. So for anyone listening out there, sometimes when we do grieve something, we get to that place where we'll have to let go and embrace something new. And that's what I was finally able to do, was to let go and to embrace something new. And that brought a lot of healing, where that constant nagging, trying to get back at you again, is pretty much gone. But yeah. This past weekend, I heard a wise woman say, anything we need outside of God, the devil will use against us. And that was one of those things, that need for family, the need for children, the need of belonging, the need of acceptance, all those things were sort of wrapped up in that grief bundle, wanting to be fully reunited with my family of origin. And the devil used it against me. So I thought, that's really profound, because we can grow in God where we actually get to the place that we don't need anything on the outside of him.
Yep.
And my early days, I couldn't have understood that. But after 20 years of growing with God and trusting him and responding and not holding back, but continually to embrace him, really has brought me to a place where I can say that and at least understand it. Will I get tested again? Perhaps. But at least I can understand it.
Yeah. You know, it's funny, because a lot of those desires are desires that God gave us, right? But what God intends, one way the enemy loves to twist and use differently. But I really believe, too, that when we surrender everything to God, he does have a way of redeeming some of those things. You know, the story is definitely not over with your family. And I think you were talking about how the coaching business was filling some of those gaps. I think in a sense, in coaching, you're being a spiritual mother to a lot of people.
And that is true. Interestingly, one of my friends gave me a plant, because I shared with her. Few people, I used to not talk about the suffering that I did of not having children. And I shared with her this summer, a friend, and she said, she went to a farmer's market and she came across a plant that she didn't know what was. And so she was fascinated by it. And she had a conversation about it. And they said it's called a plant was called Mother of Thousands or Mother of Millions. And so she bought the plant and gave it to me. And then the other thing I wanted to share that happened in my life is 2 years ago, I started networking, because I was in the coaching space now. I was getting into the marketplace of networking, business networking. And through that, I have now been given what I call a platform, but it's actually a Zoom room connected and associated with a pretty large network of business people that I call Friends for Israel. So weekly now, I have a platform or a room where I can gather people from across the world. We've had China, Germany, New Zealand, Israel, Ireland, you know, different countries, and here in the United States in different locations of people who join in to be Friends for Israel. And then today we launched, which also burns in my heart and has been prophesied in my life about 7 years ago, that I would speak to the nations. And I didn't know what that meant. I didn't know how that would be possible. You know, I'm I'm just kind of a nobody, right? How could I speak to the nations? Today, we launched the International Club that I have a goal to connect with every country or nation in the world and bring value, kind of like the Olympics.
You know,
the Olympics come together with bringing their best talent, you know, doing great heroic things.
Yeah.
Why not come together as a world and encourage each other and find ways to add mutual value in the business world and then in life?
Absolutely. That's so awesome. I love that. You know, God doesn't call the equipped, he equips the called. So, and he always biblically has used people that did not think that they were going to do anything like that, right? To do amazing things. Just look at Moses.
Yeah. And so the mother of, I have embraced, my initials are MM, Marion McSpadden. So I've embraced the mother of millions, saying, you know, it's MM.
I love that. It's so perfect. And you are. I mean, who knows? Sometimes we don't even see the people that our voices impact until, well, maybe never, right? Until we're up in heaven and we get to see the way it's affected generations. And you have such an impactful story as far as what you came out of and the way you got to know God in the midst and how he met you there.
Yeah. If that isn't love, you know, I don't know. It's the love of God.
It is.
And I like to say today that God loved the world when he made it. And he affirms that throughout his prophets, that he wants us to be his people and he wants to be our God. He wants to live with us, protect us, care for us. And then when Jesus comes on the scene, he again says, for God so loved the world that he gave his only son, that the world through him might be saved.
Yep. Yep. And even all the individual people.
Yes.
So amazing. Thank you so much for joining us. I want to ask you one more question. Actually, is there a way that people can connect with you online that you would like to share before I ask this last bit?
Yeah. I actually have a book that I wrote called Pretty Much Everything You Try Doesn't Work. And that came out of some of the experiences that I had after I made that journey in my life. And it has my story in it. So you'll get to hear part of that in the book. It's available on Amazon or on my website.
Tell us your website again, because it cut out right after Amazon. So Amazon or
everythingyoutry.com. And that's based on my book, Pretty Much Everything You Try Doesn't Work. So everythingyoutry.com, there's a link on there that you can schedule an appointment with me and have a conversation. And I'd love to meet you. No matter where you're at in the world, I'd love to meet you.
Awesome. Thank you for sharing that. Now, if you could leave our listeners with one nugget today to give them hope and to take with them, what would it be?
You know, right now, the top of my mind is the quote that I used earlier that this woman shared with me. And she actually shared two things that were pretty profound for me. One of them was, stop analyzing. It's spiritual. You can't analyze. You can't figure it out. Stop analyzing. It's supernatural when it's in the spirit. Mm. In the natural, we can add 1 + 1 and get 2. But in the spirit world, it doesn't work that way.
Yeah.
You stop analyzing.
Mm, that's good. I needed that today. Thank you so much. I want to close us out with praying, if that's okay.
Yes.
Lord, thank you so much for Marion joining us today. I want to pray a prayer for everybody listening that they feel your love the way that she did, that your arms wrap around them and that they feel your love in a powerful way today, that they feel closeness with you in a way that they have never experienced before. And whatever pain it is that they have been feeling, Lord, that you replace it with your great love, with an awareness of your presence knowing that you are with them, and with you, nothing is impossible. And with you, there is a peace that surpasses all understanding. And Lord, I pray that as Marian steps into these amazing things that you have called her to, that she experiences you giving her more redemption and more desires of her heart as she goes. Lord, thank you so much for who you are, what you have done for us. You are creator, Lord. Nothing is impossible for you. We honor you and we thank you in the name of Jesus Christ. Amen.
Amen. Amen.
Thank you so much for joining us today. I loved having you on, and we will see you next time.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. When you learn.